Welcome to another edition of Community Tides, coming to you during the noon hour on alternate Fridays with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of the Jefferson Community Foundation, to talk about new developments, new paradigms, and the new normal as we spin into an historic 2021, having left one of the most challenging years in recent history, and we will get into that soon. Because we have two special guests today for our time together. Daisy Bach is Vice President of the Jefferson County Food Bank Association. She was born in Cuba, raised in New York City, and has lived on the West Coast for the last 35 years. She has considerable experience in sales, marketing, and human resources, including work as a paralegal and administrator of a large law firm. Her experience in giving back to the community include fundraising and marketing for all four Jefferson County food banks, community outreach, and the fielding of grants. She joined the food bank in 2017 and became vice president in 2020. John Cantlin is St. Vincent de Paul's president. John graduated from UC Berkeley in 1968. And he's been a proud member of the Pile Drivers Bridge Dock and Wharf Builders Local 196 from 1973 to the present. He retired from active work in 2007, but that hasn't kept him from working as night monitor for the Coast Olecap Winter Shelter for over 6 years and working with St. Vincent's since 2007. He's been president since 2016. He has a wonderful and supportive wife of 35 years, three daughters, all of whom graduated from Chimicum High School. This time we decided that we would want to talk a little bit about the COVID Response and Recovery Fund of 2020. It's really important to shine a light on the impacts that the fund and its many community donors have had on the work of St. Vincent de Paul, for one thing, and also the food banks and the community as a whole. Siobhan, tell me about this.
Chris, over the last year, we've had the opportunity to talk occasionally about the COVID fund and the extraordinary story that was developing about how this community was coming together to scale up a landscape of services that could help those who needed it most get through this pandemic. Jefferson Community Foundation just released the annual report for the COVID Response and Recovery Fund for 2020. And it really is an extraordinary story. 1,100 donors came together to give over $700,000. All of that money went out to 34 organizations who were new organizations or existing ones that had to make significant changes to meet the growing need. Things like 475 months of rent was paid for this fund for folks who had been laid off. 2,000 households received financial assistance. 4,700 meals were delivered to folks who needed access to fresh, local, and healthy food. And that's just scratching the surface. If folks go to jcfgives.org, you can see the full report for the fund and see the extraordinary impact that these 1,100 donors made and that the dynamic and amazing leaders in our nonprofit community had on the lives of people here. And I couldn't be more proud today to have John and Daisy with us. They're just so committed, hardworking, and central partners of the COVID Response and Recovery Fund. So I thought today we could give everyone a little bit of a sneak peek about what it was like on the front lines in 2020 and how their contributions to the COVID fund helped make it happen. So welcome, John and Daisy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John, do you want to start by telling us a little bit about what you saw happening as the pandemic rolled out and the role that the fund helped St. Vincent de Paul play?
The funds started flowing in March 29th last year. We got our first funds. And prior to that, St. Vincent de Paul helped about 40 individuals and families per week, plus or minus. In a period of about 3 weeks, once we got the COVID funds available, we began to help between 40 and 45 people per week. Now, we're an all-volunteer organization, and we have 7 volunteers who help answer phones and meet people's requests. We also have 1 volunteer treasurer. So as the amount of work doubled for the treasurer. It also doubled for all of us. But the treasurer, we work about once every 6 weeks, and the treasurer works every week. It's been a real challenge for our treasurer. What we found is that once people were aware of the fact of two things, really, that we could have give significant help with rent and with utilities. We have always paid rent and utilities, but because of our limited resources, we have limits. And so instead of being able to help somebody with $200 towards their $1,300 rent payment, we were able to pay the rent. At first, a lot of people just didn't pay their utility bills. The PUD was very proactive, and they told people that if they needed help, they could call St. Vincent de Paul. And they did, in record numbers. At one point in time, for about a month, utilities, which are generally about 23, 24, 25% of our budget, for that month, they were 60% of our budget. The impact on our budget was we have funds that are set up so that we have a certain amount of money that we can give every week through the year. We still use those funds, but we added to that the money that we got from the Jefferson Community Foundation. That was used almost exclusively to help people with large rent bills and with large utility bills. I think the PUD did a survey, and there were almost 300 people that were in arrears. And by the time all the smoke cleared, that number dropped to about 100. And so all of those other people were able to start fresh, not just take $200 off their bill, like a lady that I just talked to this week. She was injured, her income stopped, everything stopped, and her utility bill was $1,800. And we just paid it.
One of the most important things that we were all working together on with you and with the OLECAP and other financial service providers was trying to limit the impacts of the pandemic by not allowing people to go into insurmountable debt. And we were really concerned that, you know, if they just stopped paying rent or stopped paying the utility bills when recovery was going to start, that people would kind of be stuck permanently in debt. And that's really what you all helped make possible.
We're basically reach out and touch someone that you know. We help neighbors. And because of the increased donations, we actually help neighbors help neighbors. And that's what we stress when we talk to either donors or to recipients, is that one hand washes the other in this society, and we're here to help. A lot of people speak about repayment, and I always say or ask, have you ever helped somebody who needed help? And everybody says yes. And I said, that's our repayment, is for you to go out and help somebody just like us. The stories are nice, but in our situation, and actually in yours too, Daisy, these stories can't have names, because they do. And so what I found is the best way to describe these things are, what about single parents? The impact of this giving to single parents has been phenomenal, phenomenal. And here's an example. A woman with three or four kids and a husband or an ex-husband who rarely pays his child support. How does she make ends meet? Because just when you look and do the math, there's nothing there. Well, I'll tell you right now, that woman cleans houses and babysits. And when this started, her income stopped. Nothing from usual sources and nothing from the ex-husband. So she's looking at a whole bunch of food stamp money and nothing else. Look at the women and men who are single parents who have had an impact on their own job, and they're also asked to be teachers. You know, if they were going to be teachers, they'd already be teachers, but most people aren't. And so imagine what a struggle that is for a single parent. There really aren't a lot of resources. One of the things that we've done is, in those cases, paid for computer time, whatever we can do to help people, including smartphones that work on Wi-Fi, so that people can use Wi-Fi and email to apply for benefits like food stamps or unemployment or some of the benefits that have been available through this period. Besides single moms, there's another huge category here. It's really ironic that we would have places like California, Port Ludlow, where the elderly people that live there have an income level on average that's much higher than the rest of the county. And then you have other people who are in the same age group, but they're living on minimum Social Security. And plus or minus, minimum Social Security is about $750 a month. The people who are surviving on that kind of money, they either live with somebody else or they live in subsidized housing. And I think one of the things we have to realize, too, is that with these people that we're trying to help, they may not have had their hours reduced by COVID. There are a variety of things that happen that just can't happen. So the woman who lives by herself in a cottage someplace is mobility impaired. And when COVID hit, the friends who would take her to the grocery store aren't there. And this is something with the food bank, right? Somebody has to do that. Those people that are on small fixed incomes have had significant help from this because we're able to come in and help them in a significant way, like pay a utility bill or even pay their subsidized rent sometimes when we have to do that.
John, the ability to be able to just apply those funds in a way that is more than just a Band-Aid, you know, is something that has a significant impact for a length of time that could make a difference. And that's really huge. And I think, Daisy, you could probably attest to that very well.
Let me address what Siobhan asked to begin with, and that was what effect did the COVID response and recovery fund have on the food bank? And all I can say was huge. So let me just paint a quick picture of what we operated like pre-COVID versus post-COVID, because this is where Jefferson County Foundation really helped us out. Pre-COVID, we have 4 food banks, they're all different, but we all heavily rely on volunteers. Like Vincent DePaul, we're 100% volunteer-run organization. So we went from set up on Wednesday or Tuesday, depending on which food bank they're looking at. We set up in the morning, distributed food in the afternoon, to now, to protect our volunteers, we went to a drive-through model. Well, that increased our volunteers. We needed to find more volunteers because now we were prepping all the food, boxing the food, separating the food on Tuesday for Wednesday delivery. Drive-through model, we're in the Pacific Northwest. It's cold and it rains here in March or and probably until June, right? Then we have a couple nice months. When our volunteers changed, now we needed to provide resources we've never needed before. It's not part of a food bank's purview to think about things like canopies for outside, tables for outside, heaters for outside, raincoats for the volunteers. I'm trying to think, we had to buy new carts because now we're rolling on carts on dirt as well as pavement as opposed to just an inside of a building. So our carts were breaking down. We had to buy new carts. So all of these types of things were an issue for us. And the foundation, through the COVID response and recovery fund, they helped us with money for all of those things that otherwise we would have tapped into just our regular funds to use for food. In addition to that, a big issue that came out through this emergency we had a supply chain breakdown. Everybody in the country wasn't just us, is trying to figure out, you know, what is safe for truckers, what is safe for warehouse people. Some places are shutting down, deliveries were affected. And we found that we needed to now almost start, I hate saying hoarding, but hoarding food, because we didn't know if we were going to get food the following week. We didn't know when we were going to get food. So now we had to put in additional shelving we didn't think about before. The foundation helped us with some monies for a forklift, because now we're putting up higher shelves and we're having to lift up food to store it there, because we didn't know how long this is going to go on or how long the food supply line was going to be affected. So the foundation was huge for us. The foundation was huge in helping us bridge all of these changes. Even volunteers, I called Jen, who's my primary contact at the foundation, said, can you reach out? Where can we get volunteers from? Because there was a shortage. You know, in Jefferson County, we have a large senior population. Well, guess what? We were chasing away our seniors who were 65 to 70 and older from volunteering because we did not want to expose them to COVID. So now we were having to find a whole new set of volunteers to work for us. And we're doing fine now, but at first it was a challenge. You know, it'll be interesting to see once people start returning to work, once everybody gets their vaccine, I assume we're going to have a shift again in volunteers. Things definitely are not over, but I think we're in a groove now. Again, thanks to the foundation, they've really been able to help us bridge a lot of these things.
That's pretty amazing, the amount of infrastructure that sort of multiplies in order to do the job. And that takes a lot of things that people don't see.
Well, I really appreciate all the kind things that you're saying about the foundation. And I do think that it was certain things were possible by this community choosing to give through the foundation. We were able to give to a landscape. So these are two of the 34 organizations that were supported. And so really being able to meet emerging needs quickly, being able to be responsive, a dollar would come in on Monday, it would be out in the community on a Friday. But I do want to say it really is that the activity, that the trust of the 1,100 donors that allowed for us to all do this together. And we're not done yet. We still have a ways to go. We want to keep looking at this frontline basic human needs organizations, making sure that they're well-funded. But it's time now, too, that we start thinking about recovery. And the COVID fund continues to operate. We welcome donations to the COVID response and recovery. And I think more and more going forward, you'll see grants going to folks like Quimper Grange for a new air ventilation system so they can start to host community gatherings, or Key City Public Theater for hands-free facilities in the bathroom so that they can start hosting shows again. We want to see more and more of these kinds of proposals. So if you, anyone listening, has a recovery strategy that they need funded, we hope you'll go to jcfgives.org. You'll find a request for proposals there. You can submit your idea for funding. We want to ask the community to keep on giving. We're not out of this yet. We know folks are still going to need financial assistance and food, and that we also need to help our institutions now reopen their doors so we can all start to come together as more of us get vaccinated. So I just wanted to send a huge thank you to not only these dynamic leaders that we have on today, but all the leaders and workers of all 34 organizations, the 1,100 donors that made the 2020 effort possible, and to say, let's come together and keep this going until we're all out of the woods.
I'd like to add something to that. People need to realize that each one of those dollars has something to do with somebody. Just St. Vincent alone, because we had the extra money in the last year, we helped 2,100 individuals and families. That's about double what we would normally do.
And Daisy, getting that food out there is just so important.
It is.
People to be fed.
It's funny, if you speak to most volunteers, especially board members, all of us have an experience at one point in our life or another of being hungry, mostly as children. And we're doing this job because we don't want people to experience hunger. It's really sad. I did want to add one quick thing. With this whole COVID, the big change we've seen is we see a lot more families now. We're seeing families moving in from out of state, moving in with their families because they can no longer afford to support themselves or their families. John mentioned single moms. I can't tell you how many single moms are now online because they've lost their job. They're the only income. And when they find out that they get food that same day, they fall apart crying in tears at being thankful. People are in need, and people can help us. And I say us, I mean the community, all the nonprofits reaching out and helping those who can't help themselves right now. It means a lot to those folks.
Well, Daisy Bach, Vice President of the Jefferson County Food Bank Association, and John Kampman, St. Vincent de Paul's President. Thank you so much for joining Siobhan and I on Community Tides today. It's just been an honor to have you both here.
Thank you.
Well, this has been another edition of Community Tides, coming to you during the noon hour on Alternate Fridays with yours truly, Chris Bricker and Siobhan Cathy, President and CEO of the Jefferson Community Foundation, that talk about new developments, new paradigms, and the new normal as we spin into a historic 2021. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.